Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host, the man who's too good to stop for a roadkill deer to check it out, Mitchell Shirk.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. Man, I am excited this week. So I'll get to do a little fun trip. So as this episode drops, Wednesday, April 8th, I'm going to be headed down to visit with some of the boys that I've met through the podcast and do a little bit of pig hunting. I get to go to John Hutspiss Ranch again. I got to go last year for the first time. I'm going back down again, flying in Wednesday night, and I get to hunt Thursday, Friday, Saturday with Nick Otto from the Huntivore podcast, Andrew Muntz from the O2 podcast formerly, and comes up to Deer Camp. You've heard him on some of the Deer Camp episodes we've done. And Nate Roosevelt, formerly with the Michigan Wild podcast. All guys from the network, all good guys, a lot of fun. And really looking forward to that trip. I mean, it is one of those trips where it is not refreshing by any means from the sense of rest and relaxation. Number one, because most of these guys are one step below being a crackhead in my mind with the way they drink Red Bull and just go, go, go. Maybe that was a little derogatory, but that's the way it feels, the way they just go. And we are always just sleep deprived because we hunt the evenings and then we hunt all night long. I think I went to bed at like 6 or 6:30 in the morning last year after the one night that we went hunting with the thermals. But it is so much fun. I said it before and I'll say it again. If we had something like that in Pennsylvania when I was growing up, I would probably either be dead or in prison because the amount of fun that I had, I would have taken it way too far when I was at 16, 18-year-old range. I mean, we were shooting pigs out of a moving side-by-side, and it was completely legal in the state of Oklahoma. So you want to talk about awesome, just a different world, and tons of great camaraderie, target-rich environment. We just had a blast. So much fun. And what an awesome opportunity for me to go down and reconnect with those guys and just have a good old time. So I'm looking forward to doing that. And so that's my pretty fun good news for this week. Now, my crappier news that I have this week, I think I told you guys a little bit before, I had to go to the doctor here. So I haven't been to the doctor in quite a long time. I had to restart the whole process of your primary physician care. I didn't have a primary doctor because I hadn't been there in over 10 years or whatever. And the reason I was going is a couple weeks ago, I was having some chest pain and pressure that just didn't feel right, and I wasn't feeling good. So, of course, the females that are in my life that were concerned by that scheduled an appointment for me, and I followed through on it and went. And I probably could have told you what was wrong before I went, but so far it seems like they're confirming that. And the reason is all winter long I was sitting at a computer and I was not exercising, and my fat ass eats way too much crap that I probably shouldn't eat. So that's resulting in, I guess I have now high cholesterol, high blood pressure, blah, 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 blah. So I'm telling you all this to say, when's the last time that you got checked out? When's the last time you did something for self-help and self-care for yourself? Because I could tell you right now, I know quite a number of people that in their early 40s suffered from heart attacks. And some of them were people who didn't take care of themselves. Some of them were people who tried to take care of themselves as far as what they ate and exercise and things like that. But the stress of their job and everything else, they had heart attacks. I know people that died from too darn young of an age for that. And, you know, I can honestly say that I probably wouldn't be doing any of this if it wasn't for the fact that I have a wife and two kids that I know rely on me and need me to be healthy and need me to be in tip-top shape so I can go and keep going and doing the sports runs and, you know, the activities and around the house and, you know, supporting the family. So I have people that rely and count on me. So that's given me my motivation. And hopefully it gives me my motivation to stick with doing healthy living things because, you know, any other time that I've tried to be on a health kick and last for a year or two and then fall by the wayside of stopping my exercise and eating too much, you know, not eating right and stuff like that, I didn't really have much of a motivation other than just my own self-interest. And now this young, smart, blonde doctor that is trying to be as nice as she can is basically saying, stop being a fat ass and do something about it. She didn't say that. I exaggerated in that. So, yeah, I'm telling you guys all this because we see it in the hunting world where we go all out, hard, pace of life. You know, I've talked about this, how you just get so wrapped up in go, and you don't make time for other stuff. You know, a lot. My bad example most of the time is when hunting season starts, I put all the other stuff around the house on hold, and all that stuff can wait. And, you know, just like random house chores or projects. But I feel like taking care of myself has been something I was like, I'll be fine, and I keep going. At some point, that's going to catch up with me. I'm gonna turn 32 this week, and I'm still young and in good shape, but at the same time, if I don't start doing something now, what am I going to be another 10 years from now? Probably a lot more out of shape, a lot worse shape than I would have been if I would have done something about it. And while I'm okay, if I keel over dead by the time my kids turn 18, they don't need me anymore. That's a little bit morbid. I shouldn't say that. let's take that back. While I don't mind it if I die at a young age because of a happenstance, I would like to enjoy the life that I have with my kids and my wife and do the best that I can. So I'm telling you all this, rambling on, because I'm telling you guys that make sure you do something to take care of yourself, whether that's scheduling the doctor's visit you've been dreading doing, I can tell you I was, or maybe that's eating better, exercising, or just getting out and clearing your mind, making sure that you make some time to go out and chase some spring turkeys here in a few weeks, or go out for a shed hunt, or do something for yourself, and slow down a little bit, have some stillness in your life, because I think for your own sanity and the pace of life that you live, you probably need it. And don't neglect it for yourself. This week's episode, this is a fun one. So I have not had the pleasure to meet that many people that were so ate up in their niche within hunting that I would compare it to the most hardcore whitetail hunters. You know, I think every time we think about hardcore hunting, I think about, you know, the all season long grinders are shooting big deer and bow hunting and, you know, blah, blah, blah. That same old Lang story we have all the time in this age of hunting media. You know, there's a lot of that, and that's really cool. But what was really cool is this week I got to talk with Tom McPherson, and Tom's a Pennsylvania native, and he is that, but grouse hunting. From the conversation I had with him, and my understanding is Tom doesn't hunt anything else anymore other than grouse. His life and obsession revolves around chasing these, you know, our state bird, you know, these crazy little mountain chickens, as I always call them. But they're a cool bird, fun bird, a delicious bird. And Tom's going to go into what his life looks like around his experience of training dogs, breeding dogs. We're going to talk about habitat. We're going to talk about his scouting that he does on a multi-county basis. They're not giving spots away, but he goes in a very big area and scouts almost year-round and grinds it hard for 6 weeks when it comes to season. And he travels out of state and does some other experiences. And it was a very high level of detail within this episode on a species that I'm pretty stupid about and I've always been intrigued by, but I never pursued much. And this was motivating for me, made me want to go out and chase some grass. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Quick shout out to our partners, Radix Hunting. Please go check out Radix Hunting and the Monarch Blind series for this upcoming turkey season. Also the other gear they have, check them out at radixhunting.com. Also, Little Mountain Outfitters. Guys, Little Mountain Outfitters, located in Richland, Pennsylvania. They are your one-stop shop for bow hunting needs and even more. And you support local business when you go to them. Go to littlemountainoutfitters.com and you can use the code WOODSMAN10, WOODSMAN10, and you can save yourself 10% off on your next purchase at Little Mountain Outfitters. It supports them. It supports me. Check it out. Thank you guys for tuning in, and have a great week. Hey, joining us on this week's show, I have Tom McPherson on the line. Tom, thanks for joining us. What is going on?
Oh, not much, man. Getting ready for the quiet season for bird hunting. I know I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but getting wound up for fishing season here in Pennsylvania, and I don't know, all things outdoors.
So I'm actually getting a little bit on the excited side because it's going to start to get loud for bird season. But my bird season is going to be those old thunder chickens that we chase. You know, I haven't seen a turkey at my house in, gosh, it's got to be going on 2 years. And literally just tonight, I was getting the kids ready for the whole nighttime process. And I looked out the window across the street, and there was a flock of turkeys. And sure enough, there was a longbeard strutting right across. And now, I don't really have anywhere real close that I can hunt them. But just seeing them, man, that got me excited. And sometimes it's the little
things. Oh, that's always nice. Yeah, I have a flock across the road from me here, and I hear them gobbling in the mornings usually. So, yeah, we'll be chasing those here shortly too, so. I have a 7-year-old, and he's all gung-ho to get out and chase gobblers around.
Yeah, chasing birds of any sort, it's a little bit of a different pace, and sometimes I think it's a better pace when it comes to getting kids involved in hunting, regardless of the species of bird you're after. You know, we're jumping the gun a little bit. Tom, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit and tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from?
Yeah, sure. I'm Tom McPherson. I'm from Butler, Pennsylvania, so about an hour north of Pittsburgh. I'm a diehard grouse hunter. I run English Setters, and I spend most of my time hunting in north central Pennsylvania, chasing grouse around the woods. So glad to be here, and thanks for having me.
Well, absolutely. What was your earliest remembering of going in chasing grouse in your lifetime, and how did you get into it?
I can remember, probably back when we had them around me, I would say in my early hunting days, maybe 13, 14 years old, maybe 12. I can't remember. I think I started at 12, but, one of the first few seasons, I actually thought it was a chicken when I saw it running down the road in front of us, my cousin and I, and we flushed them up and shot them. And, that's the first one I can remember, dogless. Shortly after, I shouldn't say shortly after, but I guess once I was established a little, had a house, all that kind of stuff, then I ventured into bird dogs and really never looked back.
You know, I've said this before in a number of instances, but when it comes to certain parts of hunting, you know, I enjoy hunting everything, right? But when it comes to deer season and anything that overlaps with deer season, if I don't have a buck shot, I have such a hard time leaving the woods and going after something else. However, you know, one of the things that's kind of captivated me the last few years is black bear. And some of the people that I know that have been so successful bear hunting, they've stopped and slowed down as far as their deer chasing that they do, and they spend some time chasing small game, chasing turkeys, chasing grouse. And with that, they were able to enjoy a hunt,
and then do some scouting. So I guess I'm just kind of curious, like, do you get into other aspects of the hunting season besides chasing grouse, or do you pretty much follow it all over the place?
Yeah, in the fall, I'm geared for grouse hunting. I try and make a trip somewhere before our season starts. A lot of the upper lake states start mid-September, so that gives like about a month jump where I can get out and get my dogs in shape, and well, they're usually in shape by then anyway, but conditioned and onto some birds. It's no secret that those states are a target-rich environment for grouse, much more so than Pennsylvania. So it's nice to get some puppies out and get them some experience before our season even starts here. So we were talking a little bit beforehand, but I go out to Minnesota. This will be my second year at Pine Ridge Grouse Camp, in like north, about 2 hours north of Duluth. So it's up there. It was great to be there last year. I got it 10 days out there. Valuable experience. Like I was saying, I had a litter of puppies last year too, so that was a great experience for them. Even though they were pretty young to be hunting, they got the road trip experience and riding in the back of my truck, and like the camp experience and all the socialization things that sort of go along with it. So all in all, success, and looking forward to going back.
Back when I was a kid, when I first started out, I did a little bit of grouse hunting, and when we used to have the late season, it always opened up after Christmas for a short duration of time, and you know, it's probably been, man, it's going on 10 years or so that season has been closed, and for the good reason that we don't have the population we have, and you just brought that up. So I'm kind of curious, you know, you brought up that it's a target-rich environment in other parts of the country. Where are we lacking in the state of Pennsylvania as far as opportunity to see grouse flourish?
Yeah, so actually, we're Pennsylvania is pretty much going to be one of the keys to keeping grouse habitat going and keeping grouse populations on the landscape. A lot of work has been done here, research-wise, and through Rough Grouse Society, putting habitat back onto the land. Our game commission was super involved with some studies with West Nile virus and sort of pinpointed how and where to make habitat so the birds have the best opportunity they can to flourish. So a lot of really, really cool stuff has been coming out of Pennsylvania basically since we closed that season. It's been an uphill march, but you can tell that we're doing the work to put the cuts in on landscape level. So it's not just 10 acres here, 15 acres there. They're big cuts on public land. And I mean, we can get into more of this too, but Rough Grouse Society is like parlaying timber sales basically to the paper companies, et cetera, from the, like from our public land. So whether it be state forests, whether it be game commission lands, and you know, some of the other various public lands, they're basically parlaying the timber sales and making sure that we get the wood cut in the right places. So all in all, it's been great. And like I said, it's pretty cool to be in on it. I'm super involved in our chapter. Not so much the Pittsburgh chapter, but the Upland Bird Hunt chapter, which is based up by St. Mary's. They're a very, very active chapter. We do events all year long. And it's really cool to see, like, when we're doing it, the birds respond. It's pretty neat. It's pretty neat to watch. So
yeah, I had some guys from Rough Grouse Society on the show a couple, probably a year or two ago from the Eastern chapter here, and I learned a lot of great information, a lot of good information that came from that. And we talked about some of the cuts and some of the projects that are underway in certain parts locally, and it's been eye-opening. I mean, some of the places that I hunt, I'm seeing and hearing more grouse than I used to, and I would echo that it's an uphill battle, but I think there is still a long way to go. And I'm curious, like, I have not ventured out into the north central part of the country where I know the grouse really flourish, and I know there's places in the northeast, like up in New England states, that have good habitat and good bird numbers. So, like, from your traveling around and your experiences and your talking, is the intensity of cutting or the volume of cutting, is the habitat practices in those parts of the country a little bit different, that it's keeping ahead of it, or is it a scale thing? Like, what from your perspective or what you've heard says this is why it's better in these parts of the country compared to what we're seeing in Pennsylvania this time?
Yeah, so all of those states, Minnesota, Michigan, Maine's another big one, New Hampshire, Vermont, all those states, a lot of their economy is based on timbering, especially in the northern regions, Upper Peninsula, Michigan. It's a forest economy there, so they're actively cutting trees, and it's on a rotation. There's a ton of that young successional habitat that grouse like, but they also need the old stuff too, so they can nest and they need all parts, I guess, all ages of forest. So they do a really good job of the patchwork, sort of a cut here, a cut there, but leaving some older stuff in between, some wetlands in between, sort of just the way they manage they're farming trees, basically, you know. So every time they harvest, creates habitat. So it's a good system for them, and it seems like that's what sort of what we're trying to mimic here.
Well, and there's definitely places like that. I hunt in north central Pennsylvania myself, where I'm seeing the intensity of cutting. Like, you can go on state forest land, and I think you can even do this for game commission land too, but I know you can for state forest, where you can go on and research where cuts are located. It'll show you when they were cut, if it has a fence around it or if not, what type of cut it was, and all that stuff. And I guess I haven't paid close enough attention to see the booms and busts. Like, I remember 15 years ago walking through a section of grapevines adjacent to some different age cuts, and, man, I'd flush out 15, 20 grouse, and I can go to that same grapevine setup when there's good grapes, and maybe I flush one or two. So I'm just curious, like, I don't really know enough about the process of gaining back the traction that we've lost and stuff. But from my mind, I've always thought like the north central part of the state had good habitat, but it seems like it's a very volatile population dynamic that we see. What have you seen in your hunting and traveling in Pennsylvania as far as the last 5 years? Up, down, mediocre? What are your thoughts?
I'd say the last 5 years have been pretty good. They were headed up. Last year, I'm hoping, was just sort of a freak year. I didn't have as many flushes as I had the previous 2 years, but also I was running some pups, and you know, I mean, there's some variables there, but definitely since 2015, it's been on the upswing pretty much every year. I think maybe 2018 was maybe the low, but you know, starting then until now, it's been pretty much up, even if not by much, but pretty much up every year.
If you could think of anything that you think would rapidly change the pace of this or see improvements, do you think there's lowest holes in the bucket as far as seeing us get to the next echelon as far as the grouse and where they go? What is that lowest hole in the bucket? Is it just a habitat thing?
Yeah, I would say for sure. But, well, okay, so that's all we can control, really, is the habitat part. And humans have gotten so good at stopping forest disturbance, you know, fire, et cetera, that habitat that normally would have been made isn't being made anymore because we're afraid to cut a tree down. I feel like maybe the best example of that is the Allegheny National Forest. Since it's nationally held, it's a little bit, there's more red tape, I guess, to get trees cut on the national forest. So that's a huge tract of land, anyone that knows, in you know, northwestern Pennsylvania, you know, north central Pennsylvania, and if they can get that moving, and I know that's on the project list, I feel like we're going to see some habitat exploding on there too. Any of the forests, national forests, state forests, all have like a forest conservation plan where they're trying to get X amount of acres into certain types of habitat. So they've been calling for more young forest habitat in the national forest, but they just haven't had the manpower to get it done. And again, I think Rough Grouse Society stepped up and helped parlay that, and you know, help get all that ball rolling here. The only thing is, we got to wait 10 years till we can hunt the stuff they cut. So, it's the nature of the beast. Basically, if you're not making habitat, you're losing it. That's the way I look at it. Whenever I'm going for, you know, looking for spots and stuff, like if I'm not finding spots, I'm losing them because they're getting older every day, and they're only good for so long until they're grown out. So. It's a never-ending battle of looking for new places and balancing the old, so you're not shooting everything out of your old cover, so there's still some that, you know, so it's definitely a balancing act. But like I said, I think we're on the right trajectory. So
I think so too. I mean, anybody who, I'd love your perspective on this because you travel a lot of different places and you look at it through a different lens than I do. But when I look at the habitat in Pennsylvania, first of all, when you look at state forest, national forest, state parks, game lands alone, I believe we're about 3 million acres of public land.
Oh, there's a ton of it, right?
And
that's not even counting a lot of the like industrial stuff that you're allowed to get access to. You know, it's public, but it's private.
There's city-owned land. There's township-owned land. There's all sorts of different entities. So the amount of vastness that we have in Pennsylvania for public land and public land hunting opportunity, that is an ungodly amount of land to manage well. And we have, in our state agency, we continually see, you can follow the burn maps. You can see the harvests that are going on in the timbering. There is so much habitat work being done, and like the different chapters or branches of, you know, food and cover, you see those guys working constantly, and there are only so many people, but you think about how much burning, cutting, herbicide work and stuff that's being done in the tracts of public land. Like, there is a lot being done, but when you look at it, the scale that we have, it is a constant uphill battle. It never, ever ends. You brought up fire. Fire is just a very, very interesting tool. I've loved fire. I've seen a lot of positive benefits from the the large game species, so to speak. But I know that there's a benefit to turkeys and small game and other stuff like that. So do you look at fire as a tool that's providing better cover and better food quicker?
I think it's just a tool in the toolbox, basically. Like, that burn is going to give them some food right away that they can scratch up. Like, I've heard guys say, like, you see turkeys in the burn and it's still smoking. You know, and they're in there picking out whatever they can get, you know, seeds or whatever. So I just think it's another way to put some diversity on the landscape. I don't target them by any means. If it's a controlled burn here. I do know in places down south, though, if you're not burning, you don't have quail. So it is directly linked, you know, in some places, but not so much here for grouse, at least.
Interesting. So I've never really spent much time grouse hunting. And from an experienced grouse hunter like yourself, when you start out trying to set up a successful season, how are you going about breaking down the landscape and deciding where you want to adventure? I mean, we've already hit the nail that there's so many places we can cover. We can't cover it in one season. So how do you take down the big complex and break it into something that is worth your time?
Yeah, so sort of the way, just because I have to travel so far, sort of the way I have my life arranged right now, there's a few places that are closer to me that maybe don't hold as many birds, so it's not as much of an investment, though, for me to drive there. So I sort of save those for maybe bad weather days or days that I don't know if I can go all day. And then I have sort of three or four, like, main camps, I guess. A few of my friends have camps up north, so I stay there sometimes. So I have a few, like, we'll say base camps near a few of the towns up north, and I'll just get on my phone. Unapologetically, I look in Onyx very frequently. It has all the information that I'm after. Like you said, it sort of outlines cuts. If you have your layers on, it outlines the cuts, tells you when they did them and what type they are. So all that matters when you're trying to find birds. I want something that says removal or like final removal. A lot of times they do they'll call them commercial thins, or they just don't take enough trees out. So I want something where they literally cut it down.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars
at affordable prices.
That's, you know, a two-tiered cut where they set up like a shelter wood, so they'll leave like, and this is, I mean, I'm no forester by any means, but just, you know, by my observation, they'll leave a certain amount of seed trees, let the saplings start coming up through, and then once the saplings are a certain size, they'll go back through and cut the bigger seed trees out. I think when you're trying to keep oaks or, certain types of trees, I think they do that with cherry pretty frequently too. You know, just leave a few cherries stand and then let all the saplings come up, and then they'll get back through and cut them. So grouse like high stem density. So that's a term that a lot of grouse hunters say and use. So essentially as many stems as you can get in an acre for thickness, more or less. So, you know, everyone knows they like the thick stuff. The trick is when you're hunting them, finding it where it's thick enough that they're there, but it's thin enough that you can still shoot.
So when it comes to thick stuff, that's a pretty broad generic thing, and you can get lost into what's good thick stuff and bad thick stuff even in the world of whitetails too. Like, I know there's places where thick stuff is invasive junk, or it's just a birch stand and stuff. So, like, if you could give the species makeup of the ideal thick stuff that you're going after, do you pay attention to that as far as diversity, or is stem density the main thing you're looking for?
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
When I'm hunting, I might try and circle the whole cut and get any of the roads and any of the edge type stuff. And then once you get in there and start chasing them, it's, you know, who knows what's going to happen. So that's my general plan of attack, but like I say, all bets are off once they start flying. So
now, I know you hunt with dogs, and like my experience grouse hunting or just, you know, stomping around in the woods is obviously without dogs. And, you know, over time I've flushed less grouse on my own, but I've often wondered, and you may have a better idea of this, how many birds or how often do you think birds don't flush or run without the use of a dog when you're tromping around?
I would say there's good odds. They run a lot on my dogs too. You know, some, I'll get a point and then all of a sudden we're trailing and I'm like, well, I know we got a running bird and it's, you know, we'll eventually get it pinned, but that's their first instinct is to run rather than fly. You know, they don't want to put themselves out there where everyone knows, you know, all the predators know where they're going. They make that noise when they fly, they use energy. They're trying to not fly if they can help it. The trick is that's when the dog comes in, is having a dog that knows how to handle that and, stay back far enough that they don't flush them, make them feel comfortable enough to stop and then sort of get them pinned in a log pile or whatever. My female right now is so good at that. It's not even funny. I've never seen anything like it. I had so many flush right at my feet, which is fairly uncommon. They're a fairly skittish bird. Everything's trying to eat a grouse, you know, so they're trying to not get eaten. And I had so many shots that came out of my feet and I didn't make any of them. I felt bad for the dog.
they are a booger to kill. I mean, I've heard a lot of people talking about how good a shot they are when they're killing ducks and stuff. And I thought a lot of people, you know, more power to them, but shoot some grouse in some of the places they're at and tell me how good of a shot you are.
That's why I like it, man. If you can kill a grouse, you pulled something off that day. You know, it's either an incredible amount of luck or you were really good that day. So yeah, it's, I mean, I get more than one or two a year, obviously, but it's like shooting a big deer, you know, for a whitetail hunter. I get pretty pumped up about every single one of them.
What do you prefer as far as your weapon of choice? You know, everybody's got their own trusty shotgun that they like, but how in depth do you get with shot selection, choke selection, gauge selection? The list goes on and on.
Yeah, I, I guess I'm a traditional guy. I run English setters, and I hunt with a side by side. It's a 28 gauge. I don't do anything special for my load. It's just a regular bird shot, 7.5 target loads. You know, nothing special. Grouse aren't too hard to kill. If you get a BB or two in them, they're going to come down. So, I run an improved cylinder choke on my first shot for my up close shots, and then a modified in my other barrel once they get out a little bit further.
And what is a long shot for you as far as grouse? Because when you're in thick cover, it can't be too far.
No, I would say last year I made a shot at about 35 yards and I could not believe it. So that's far for me.
That sounds like a
perfect. Most of them are 15 yards, 20 yards. I mean, it's not far. It's usually from, you know, from there to the corner of your room. It's not a far shot usually. So, yeah.
Do you get into scouting as far as preseason or others? Like, what is preparation look like for you for a good grouse season?
It's an all year excursion, getting ready for grouse season. Honestly, it's a full year process for me. Like I mentioned, though, I take a little break to let the birds nest, and I like to go trout fishing, so I take a little break for that. But let's start now, I guess. So I just was up north 2 weeks ago. That was probably my last trip. I saw a grouse strutting on the road, and I was just running my dogs, just trying to find some new spots, get them. Like I said, I have a couple young pups. I was trying to get them on some birds and some exposure. But I saw a grouse strutting on the road, and I got out and got a video of him. And when he ran up in the woods, and when he flew, I'm pretty sure it was a hen he was displaying for on the road, flew across the road with him. So I thought, okay, that's I probably ought to be done for the year and not screw up their mating season. So I'll take the next few months where I don't run on wild birds, and I have a pigeon loft behind my house for dog training. So I'll get these puppies trained up here. They're going to be one in June. So I'm working with some young pups yet. So from now until, I want to say probably the end of June, I'll just be on training birds in my yard. In a game lands actually behind my house here. I have a game lands just a couple hundred yards behind my house. I'll take my pigeons over and work my dogs there. And then about the end of June, I'll start looking for grouse again, just out riding around. There's a ton of e-scouting that'll probably go in the next few months too. Like I said, I just look on X and drop pins and while I'm up, you know, I'll ride up, I'll go somewhere I know that I'm going to get into birds for the puppies, and then I try and do that and then go somewhere new. So like I said, if you're not finding spots, you're losing them basically. So every trip up, I try and look at somewhere new. The only thing about the summer is a lot of those places have rattlesnakes. So yeah. I got to be really, really careful about where I'm dumping my dogs out of my truck. So that'll ramp up through August into September. September, I'll probably... if not this year, next year, I'm probably going to go see if I can get into some sharp-tailed grouse and some Hungarian partridge in, like, the northern prairies. Like I said, I don't know if it'll be this year or next year. Once October gets here, I start going to New York chasing grouse. I just hop the border into New York. That's that southern tier. There's decent bird numbers there. It's enough to keep me entertained, enough to keep me going until our season here starts. So that I'll do that for a couple weekends. And then once our season starts, it's pretty much what I save all my vacation time for. I'm in the woods, 30-plus days a year chasing grouse. It's quite a bit. Not as much as I want it to be, but, you know, it's quite a bit. So I'm also real involved in, that St. Mary's chapter for Rough Grouse Society, and we put on a hunt, a fundraiser hunt out of St. Mary's. So I guide a couple days for that. That's at the beginning of November. Sort of like you said, once bear season comes, I'm sort of fighting guys for the same spots. Like all the bear hunters and all the grouse hunters sort of want the same cover, that thick stuff. So, deer season will get here. I'll take a short break. I'll probably hit New York again those days. And, although I did see that they're considering, I don't know if it happened or not, leaving grouse open for rifle season, which I'm not sure what I think about that. I don't know if I'll be that brave to venture out.
I was going to say that would be crazy.
Yeah. I don't know what I think about it. I love the opportunity, but at the same time, I don't, I don't want anybody mistaking any me or my dogs or anybody for deer, just being in the wrong place at the wrong time, just generally. So we'll see how that goes. And then, you know, once the winter hits, I'll just be waiting for my dog to come into heat, and I'm going to get her bred again next year, and we'll start the process over again with puppies.
That's an in-depth season for a...
Oh, it's all, it's 24/7. It's all the time. Yeah.
You know, you brought up the potentially having grouse open in deer season. So, obviously, I've had it on my podcast because I'm an avid deer hunter. We've talked with other people about, you know, what do you think about the way seasons are open in the state? And I want to hear it from your perspective, from somebody who's not as engaged in the deer, because we've got a lot of people that, you know, want this new thing, want that new thing, and there's controversy amongst deer hunters and such. So are you overall satisfied with the amount of hunting opportunity that you have, or do you think that something like that, like we need more opportunity? And the reason I ask this is because sometimes I wonder, where's the line in being too liberal with our hunting seasons?
Yeah, so the whole West Nile thing was pretty scary, with the population dropping like it was. And like you mentioned, we closed that second season after Christmas. I weighed in, not that they listen to my opinion, but I did weigh in on that a little bit. And sort of my thoughts were, like, if this is what we have to do, it's what we have to do. But I don't want it to be off the table forever. You know, please keep reevaluating. If it's able to be brought back, please bring it back. But also, I understand why that season was closed. And anyone that hunts grouse knows, sort of the longer the season goes on, the easier they are to kill. It shrinks down their hiding spots. They lose all, you know, as the leaves come down, they lose cover. It pushes them into very small areas that's decently easy shooting as far as grouse hunting goes in the winter. You know, there's not a whole lot blocking you out there. So I do understand why they did it. And like I said, they do reevaluate every year if they can bring it back. It just hasn't happened yet. I don't know that we just for safety reasons, I don't know that we need to add in, the rifle season. It's nice, you know, nice thought that they're thinking about the small game hunters, as well. But generally, I'm pretty satisfied. I always wish it was longer, but, you know, there's only so many weekends. So right now our season's about 6 weeks long, and it also goes along with woodcock season, and they're a migratory bird, and that's federally governed, so, and they inhabit a lot of the same places. So it makes sense to run it along with woodcock season, because you're flushing them anyway, you're finding them anyway. So, I feel like our season does make sense. Would I like it to be longer? Maybe a week or two earlier, but at the same time, everyone knows how early October is. It could be 50 or it could be 80, and I can't really hunt with my dogs when it's 80 anyway. So, I don't know. I feel like they have it set up as well as they can.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, because I feel like a lot of our hunting seasons are set up as well as they can be. And as much as I hate to see it go when it's over, it's a season. It's just like summer has to come to an end, fall has to come to an end, winter has to come to an end, spring has to come. It's a season. And, you know, you think about it, we've got a deer season that's 7 weeks long of archery, and then it goes into a two-week rifle season, and we have a bear season in there, and then we have a late season deer season, and, you know, you got turkey season. Like, all these seasons, they're set according based off of the science and the population of the animal. And you think about how much time we have available to hunt. It's pretty awesome. So I don't know. I guess I get frustrated, Tom, sometimes when we get into this bickering argument about the season starts and the length of seasons. And I wanted to hear your perspective, because you're coming from it at it from a different angle. What I appreciated is, like, you said it yourself, like, we have 6 weeks, we have a good season. And the other cool thing is, this is what you want to do. So you make the most of the time that you have. And
yep.
You're not going to look back on it. You're going to move forward on it with what you have.
I think the biggest thing that helped was the Sundays, honestly. That doubled my opportunity right off the top. You know, I work Monday through Friday, so unless I'm using my vacation, which I do, but my only opportunities were Saturdays.
Yeah.
So, like I said, when you open up Sunday, that doubles my days right off the top. So that was great in my opinion. Do I get to go on all of them? No, but still, I could if I wanted to, which is all you could ask for.
Do you run into a lot of competition as a grouse hunter?
Usually, I know them. no, generally not. There's a handful of us around, and like I said, in that St. Mary's chapter, we're all pretty good buddies. So, usually I know them, but I wouldn't say that there's, it's not like the opening day of trout season where you're riding down the road and you're like, holy shit, where'd all these people come from? Like, it's definitely not that. So, which is why I like it. It's a sort of a solitary pursuit. So.
Oh, it is, and I've never really talked to somebody that had a year-long process of how you follow along and follow up. And the other thing I take for granted is, like, you're constantly working to keep your dog sharp and healthy and ready to go in all ways, shapes, and form. And that's a whole different element that I'm not used to. First of all, I don't have the patience for dogs. Like, I love dogs. I've always been a dog person. But I'm just at the point now, like, I just don't have the patience to work with them and train them. Was that something that was just ingrained in you, that you've constantly worked with dogs and is that
just... Yeah, I've always liked them. But when I got bird dogs is when I got serious. Everyone talks about the training part. I don't know that I really look at it as training as much as it is exposure. I'm just exposing them to what their life is going to be with me. A lot of it's a lot of what they do is instinct anyway, and it's just sort of turning that switch on and saying, hey, this is, look how fun this is, and this is what we're going to do. So I think I'm on my sixth English setter. Five of them are here still alive. And I've helped people with I don't know how many countless puppies and getting dogs going and getting people's dogs on grouse and just anything I can do to help out. It's tough, especially when you are new to it. It's definitely tough.
Well, it's anything when the learning curve is tough. It's an uphill battle, and I think time is usually the thing that gets most people.
For sure.
Absolutely. So where do you want to go next with this conversation? Because I got to be honest with you, I'm a little bit shocked and overwhelmed by the nature. You take bird hunting of the fall as seriously as some of the most in-depth deer hunters that I've had on this podcast. So as somebody who's a novice when it comes to bird hunting, what are things that I'm not thinking about, I'm not asking you, that we should talk about?
Oh, man. So I feel like the big we talked about it some, but habitat is the big thing. Cutting down trees got a very bad reputation for good reason. We it was a barren earth, in the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. We cut them all down, which is definitely not what you want to do too. But as we were growing up, you hear about they're clear cutting the rainforest and clear cuts are bad. Well, clear cuts are only bad whenever you don't let it grow back is the thing. There's been a few places in north central PA that have been clear cut for solar farms. That's certainly not a great thing out in the middle of our public land. It's been clear cut, and that will not ever grow back. So that's a little disappointing. But at the same time, I think people need to realize that it's just a tool, and it needs to be done to maintain forest health is one of the big things. Everyone always says if it's good for the bird, it's good for the herd. I know a lot of whitetail guys, don't like their tree stand tree cut down, but I can't tell you how many big bucks I bump out of those clear cuts when I'm grouse hunting, and I've noticed sort of their MO. They get themselves up against a down log and they get the wind in their face, so that way if you come in from behind them, they can hear you coming and they have that protection of the. The deadfall behind them, they stand up and go. And if you come the other way, the wind blows them right in their face. So, it's pretty cool to, see the, how they're working the cover as well. And, if I was a deer hunter, I feel like that would be valuable information that you could, apply. They like those cuts just like anything else does. So,
Absolutely. One of the things I wondered when you were going in and talking about cuts, like, I've always loved cuts, and I've been fortunate enough, like, I've seen the benefit of cuts on private land for my hunting, and then I've also seen it and used it for hunting on public land as well. So when you think about cutting, You know, one of the conversations I've had with people is the scale of cutting. You know, one of the one thing I've noticed is some of the cuts years ago I noticed didn't get cut at the intensity that I liked, to the point where it didn't overwhelm the resident deer herd, and the deer herd would just annihilate what was growing. And like, there's a certain volume I think we got to go, whether it's the intensity of cutting or the amount of volume as far as acres that need to get cut in order to maximize that. So from your perspective and what your motives and self-interests are with birds, how do you view cutting and volume and intensity?
Yeah, I like, I guess the way I sort of try and arrange my day, I guess that would be a good way to talk about this. Whenever I'm going somewhere, I'm making a trip and it's an investment for me. So I try and pick somewhere that there's some pretty heavy forest activity, you know, forester activity, a lot of different age cuts, a lot of connected cuts if I can find them. So maybe, you know, one that was just done and that beside one from the early 2000s with a 2010 touching it. So as much diversity as you can get, maybe on a hillside with a creek below it. So they, so the grouse have everything they need just in that little, you know, the less they have to travel, the better off they are. And then you think about it, takes you, I don't know, an hour to an hour and a half to cover each spot. So if you're going to, you know, if you're going to hunt all day, you need at least I would say three to five covers that you're planning on checking out for the day. A couple of them will be a bust, or the birds won't be in there, you know, whatever the case may be. But usually I try and stack the deck in my favor in that way. Also, once the season gets there, I try not to go anywhere that I haven't seen birds, so I don't have a whole lot of unproductive wasted time. Whether it's, you know, I've got them pointed and flushed, or whether I just seen them running across the road back and forth, or whatever the case may be, when the season gets here, it's go time, and I try and capitalize as much as I can. With that being said, like I said earlier, I try not to be a little bit of a conservationist here and not shoot too many birds out of one cover, because then, you know, that covers out for the next year because you just wiped them out. So it's definitely walking the tightrope a little bit. You need to have some area. Grouse are definitely a public land bird. You need large expanses where there is active forest management to sustain them. Everyone talks about the heyday of grouse hunting, like in the 80s and 90s. At least in the western half of the state where I'm from, that's when all the strip mines that they had done in the 50s through the 70s were regenerating. So it was all grouse habitat everywhere. And even, you know, as I started hunting, in the 90s, the late 90s, there were still birds here. I can remember flushing them walking into deer hunt. Just West Nile, when it came in the early 2000s, just wiped out the rest of what we had. The Game Commission has found out through their research that one certain type of mosquito carries West Nile virus, and it likes elevations below 2,000 feet, I believe. And where I'm at is like wet, swampy, and there's mosquitoes here. So it's low-lying land. So that, on top of the lack of habitat and the lack of cuts, you know, there's just not as many birds in the, let's call it, south of Interstate 80 as there once was. So I know, like I said, we talked about Rough Grouse Society and all the work they're doing. They're working in three different parts of the state. So the Pennsylvania Wilds region, the Poconos region, and then the Laurel Highlands as well, and they're trying to stabilize those populations there because there are a resident population there, and then move outward like spokes in a wheel to connect those, you know, those three different areas of the state. So like I said, I feel like there's a really good plan. Some other things, I guess cool grouse hunter nerdy stuff. There's also a map on the Game Commission website that shows their research based on the West Nile and mosquitoes and all that kind of stuff that the foresters can see on where is the best places to place grouse habitat. So it's all the high elevation, steep hillsides where the water runoff, you know, where, and that's, they've targeted those areas for grouse, and I feel like that, for grouse habitat, and I feel like that's also made a big difference. It's just pretty cool to see all the collaboration. You know, you mentioned some of the big game animals. I know the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, and you know, all of those game agencies, National Wild Turkey Federation, they're all partnered up because, like I said earlier, what's good for the bird's good for everybody. So I feel like everyone is sort of on board right now. It's getting some traction, which is, like I said, it's awesome to be a part of. It's cool to see.
100%. Anytime that I see habitat reclamation coming forth and seeing positive response to it, I think it's a win. You know, you talked about reclaimed mines. I mean, there's so many, you know, heavily mined locations throughout this state. And, you know, seeing those restorations where we take abandoned mine drainage that's polluting water and we restructure it to go through limestone filters and, you know, regrade things in order to allow topsoil and that allow some regeneration. I mean, I know there's places in the central part of the state that that's some of the best grouse habitat that you'll mm-hmm. find. And then additionally yeah. to that, there's some reclaimed mine habitat throughout the north central part of the state that's great for elk. You know, obviously anything early succession helps whitetails. It's going to help turkeys. It is an all benefit. I always looked at grouse as an indicator species. You know, whenever we do any kind of aquatic research, and, you know, I'm sure my buddy that's listening to this, that's a fisheries biologist, is going to laugh at me because I've forgotten just about everything that we learned in our aquatics classes. But I remember going through and looking at microinvertebrates and macroinvertebrates, and there's certain indicators that indicate water quality and the health of that stream. And it's no different when you look at the landscape of timber in the forest. And I mean,
yeah, the grouse is the grouse to the woods is the brook trout to the streams.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? It's that's what it is, right?
Yeah, freaking deer will grow anywhere. Oh my gosh, Tom, this has been a fantastic conversation. I really appreciate you sharing your knowledge and sharing your experiences. You know, we're this hunting world has been so saturated with the big game species, and I think the small game species and the small game hunters that are diehard, I think there's two things that go on there. Number one, I just think you don't have the volume, which is probably good for you, and there's more opportunity, right? But the other thing, too, is I've learned that the people who are really good at their niche in certain what I'm going to call just spinoffs or just something that's different compared to the norm, it's more of a tight-lipped organization and group of people sometimes. I value you sharing your perspective on this holistic approach and also sharing some grouse hunting advice, which I echo. You know, I, to this day, have still never killed my first grouse. I shot one with a bow one time and didn't get it, and that's the only opportunity I ever had.
Well, if you can get out of a tree, we can change that this year.
I might take you up on that. I've been getting out of the tree a lot more lately, and that's just because I want to go chase bear.
I see. Either way, though, drop some pins and keep track where those grouse are. We'll go chase them around.
Tom, I appreciate you. Before we go, anything you want to leave listeners with or things that they should be thinking about as they're going into this upcoming season and around the world of forestry, habitat, grouse, or just positive thoughts before we leave?
Yeah, definitely get out and get involved. I can't plug Rough Grouse Society enough. Amazing organization, amazing people. I've had so many doors opened to me from just saying yes and getting involved. It's really unbelievable. I really can't talk good enough about the organization and the people that are there. Yeah, so I'm just getting ready for the fall coming up. If anyone wants to follow along, they can check it out on Instagram. I got my page is at tmcpherson86, and then my little kennel page is at penswoods, all one word, and then underscored setters. And that's all things English setters and my upcoming breedings and my dogs and my pups and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, check it out, follow along, and maybe I'll see you in the woods.
Thanks again, Tom.
Yeah, appreciate it.